From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This Pope, Pope Francis, is not shy. This week, he is weighing in powerfully on climate change. So did Pope John Paul, so did Benedict. But Francis takes it to a new level, makes it a major moral issue, ties it to fundamental human responsibility and politics. It's explosive. Five GOP candidates for president are Catholic. The Pope's speaking. They're squirming. This hour on Point, the Pope's message on the environment and his urgent call to protect it. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Catholics, non-Catholics, what's your response to the Pope on climate change? Could his intervention be a game changer? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Rome is Michael O'Loughlin, national reporter at the Boston Globe's Catholic news site Crux, author of the forthcoming book, The Tweetable Pope. Michael, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be with you.
There's an encyclical coming out this week. It's leaked already in a major Italian magazine. And what are the big points that are emerging? This Pope has talked about this for a while now, but we've got a 190-page encyclical coming, a lot of it out already. What's there, Michael?
Sure, yeah. It's been a wild week here in Rome with this encyclical being leaked Monday, and the Vatican, of course, denouncing that and asking journalists to wait until the official version comes out tomorrow. But we see, like you said, the Pope's been talking about the environment and climate change ever since his election 2 years ago, and many of those themes appear to have found their way into the encyclical. He says that the most controversial part, he says that human beings are primarily responsible for changes in the climate. He blames this on a culture of greed and consumerism that's harming the planet. He laments that the poor and people in developing countries, unfortunately, will bear the brunt of these changes in the environment if we don't do something. He calls climate change one of the principal challenges facing humanity. And again, he's really lamenting here that the poor, the people with the least amount of resources to do something about this, will suffer if wealthy countries don't step in to change how things are going.
And he's asking for policy changes. This is not just a distant sort of light spiritual guidance from afar. He's saying we need policy changes and fast.
Yeah, this is a Pope who understands that he has a global platform, and he's not afraid to wade into the most controversial issues of the day. Now, of course, he's still a leader in a Christian church, and this is grounded theologically. He talks about how the sin in the human heart is causing disease in the soil, water, air, and living creatures. But it's not, like you said, it's not just a theological reflection. The Pope wants people to act, and he wants Catholics to put pressure on their lawmakers to really change the way we go about thinking how we interact with the environment and the earth.
For years and years and years, people have gone to the Bible, where it talks in Genesis about man's dominion over the earth, and often use that to justify lots of interaction with the earth. This Pope talks about exploitation and maybe even reads that passage in a different way, Michael.
That's right, Tom. For a while, environmental activists sometimes blamed human interaction with the earth, human pollution and degradation, on a Judeo-Christian understanding of the creation story. But this Pope says no, that Christians are, all people are here to take advantage of natural resources, but that we have to be stewards of those resources. You know, the earth isn't here to be exploited for material gain, but it's something that all people should be able to partake in. And he really wants us to be custodians of creation and to make sure that the gifts of creation are available for everyone. Something interesting about this encyclical is last month, the Vatican hosted a conference with the United Nations, and Ban Ki-moon was there, the head of the UN, and they talked about ways that moral and religious leaders could rally the troops to protect creation. And this set off a little bit of a warning light for some conservative Catholics concerned that climate activists who believe overpopulation is an issue, that the church's pro-life message might be watered down or lost. And this Pope in this encyclical says, you know, let's go ahead and work with like-minded groups But remember that the Earth is here for people, and while we must respect creation, we shouldn't try to lower the amount of people on Earth. He doesn't buy into the overpopulation critique. For him, it's about making sure creation serves everyone.
Here he was talking about creation. This was about a year ago, outside the Vatican, warning of the dangers of not protecting the environment.
E questo deve essere l'atteggiamento nostro.
Pope Francis saying, this must be our attitude toward creation. We must protect it, because if we destroy creation, creation will destroy us. Let's not forget that, says the Pope.
Non dimenticare quello, eh?
And this week, a 190-page encyclical coming out. Michael, an encyclical. In the Catholic Church operation, what's an encyclical mean?
Sure, that's a good question. An encyclical is the highest form of church teaching. This means that a month of preparation goes into it. It's grounded in church history and tradition and teaching. Again, like you said, 190 pages. This is not light stuff. The church, Pope Francis, is grounding his views on the environment in a long history of Catholic teaching about the environment. And it's something that is written for Catholics and, as the Church says, all people of goodwill. The Pope said today during his general weekly address at St. Peter's that he hopes everyone will read this document with an open mind and an open heart and really consider his words and consider how they personally can act to take better care of the earth and try to avoid some of these calamities that we see happening.
The Pope already saying in January that global warming, climate change was mostly a man-made phenomenon, saying then that man has slapped nature in the face. This, a much bigger, more powerful, more thorough message coming out this week, and already pushback coming. Five Republican candidates for the presidency, those running for the Republican nomination, are Catholic. Here's one of them, Rick Santorum, on the Dom Giordano show. This was a little earlier, suggesting that the Pope should stay away from the climate change issue.
Church has gotten it wrong a few times on science. And I think that we probably are better off leaving right. science to the scientists and focusing on what we do, what we're really good at, which is theology and morality.
Of course, Santorum, one of the majority of Republican candidates who doesn't accept the link between humans and climate change. What about this Pope and this Santorum saying stay away from science, focus on theology and morality? As I read this early translation that the Vatican says is a draft, not final, that's coming tomorrow, the Pope is now tying climate change directly into theology and morality, Michael.
Of course, you have it exactly right. For this Pope, he doesn't see this difference between how we act in the political sphere and our moral beliefs. For him, and for many Catholics, of course, they believe that moral issues expand into the public realm. So whether we're talking about the economy, military spending, national security issues, and now the environment, this Pope is saying these are moral issues. And this isn't anything new, as you alluded to in the introduction. Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict, also tied the environment to morality issues. So, you know, Senator Santorum is a politician and needs to do what it takes to win races, so he's distancing himself, as are other Republican politicians, from this Pope. But it does make you wonder, with an approval rating, Pope Francis' approval rating of 90% in the United States, you got to wonder if this is a wise strategy for some of these politicians.
Puts them, I would think, in a bind. Michael O'Loughlin in Rome with Crux, the Catholic news site there from the Boston Globe. Please stand by, Michael. Thomas Groom joins me now in the studio, professor of theology and religious education at Boston College, director there of the Church in the 21st Century Center, author of What Makes Us Catholic. Tom Groom, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom. Delighted to be with you again.
So here comes this enormous encyclical. We so far have the draft, but it's big, it's detailed. It clearly is not going to change that much. What do you see coming from the Pope in this very large letter to the Catholic faithful?
Well, I think it will make a huge difference. At least that's my hope. I welcome it. I think he's absolutely right. And as Michael well summarized, that climate change, global warming is for real, that it is humanly made. that it's our responsibility. And if we don't take responsibility for it, as the good Pope says, we're going to destroy ourselves. It's clearly a moral issue, but I would say it's even a theological issue, mm-hmm. because beginning with those first two stories that we find in the first two chapters of Genesis, the stories of creation, Pope Francis is correct in saying that dominion has been misinterpreted. Now, he's not the first to say that. Good scripture scholars have been saying that for years.
Dominion sounds like we're the boss, period.
Yes, it does, but the original Hebrew there, Tom, does mm-hmm. not mean dominion, as in power over or to exploit. Mm-hmm. It means to be the protector, to be good stewards of mm-hmm. creation. And of course, Genesis 2, verse 15 makes it explicit that we're called to be the stewards of creation. So this is a matter of faith. Of course, it's a political and a social issue, but it's a matter of spirituality. It's a matter of faith. It's a matter of theology for Catholic Christians, but also for any people of goodwill, and indeed for all people of faith who share those texts as sacred, Catholics, Muslims, Jews, and so on. Genesis 1 and 2 are foundational texts for us.
What's the weight of an encyclical for a faithful Catholic? If the Pope says, this is the way it is, please do this or do this, can a good Catholic say no?
Well, an encyclical is not quite the highest level of mm-hmm. authority that we have. I mean, a decree from a general council of the church, for example, the documents of the Second Vatican Council would be more authoritative than an encyclical. But this Pope is not depending on coercion. He's really trying to be persuasive about this issue. So it's not a matter of if you're a good Catholic, you'll agree with the Pope. If you're a good Catholic, you'll seriously consider what the Pope is saying. And if you don't, then you're dismissing this powerful voice that is calling us to be more faithful people at this point in time.
Tom Groom, please stand by. Michael McLaughlin in Rome. Behind us, the Canticle of the Creatures, originally composed by St. Francis of Assisi. The saint from whom Pope Francis has taken his papal name. This Pope diving in big on climate change this week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about Pope Francis launching a Catholic crusade on climate change, a big new encyclical out this week, links climate, justice, the way we're living, and the will of God, creation. The Pope is saying stop and change here. Here he was at his weekly general audience in St. Peter's Square on Earth Day in April, Pope Francis speaking to Harmony with Creation, interpreted here by NPR.
La relazione degli uomini con la natura.
May the way people treat the earth not be guided by greed, manipulation, and exploitation, but rather may it preserve the divine harmony between creatures and creation, also in the service of future generations.
There are a few sentences. This week, out tomorrow, 190 pages, very detailed, getting into all kinds of chemicals and policies and economic structures and morality and the will of God from the Pope in the encyclical that's coming out this week. It was leaked. It came out in Italian in L'Espresso, big Italian magazine. Everyone's looking at what's there. The church says wait and listen, but it looks substantially out in public now. Michael Laughlin is with us from Rome. He's national reporter for Crux, the Catholic news site. Thomas Groom is with me, professor of theology at Boston College. With us right now as well from Washington, John Gehring, Catholic program director at Faith in Public Life. It's an organization that advocates for advancing faith as a force for justice and compassion, the common good. John Gehring, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be here, Tom.
What do you see new? Many popes, the last three, including Francis, have talked about the environment. Where does this encyclical take that conversation, take the Pope?
Well, as you said at the top of the show, Tom, I mean, this is an explosive document, and I would argue this has been a pretty explosive papacy.
Yes.
I mean, the fact is this is a document that's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable because it challenges a status quo that the Pope thinks needs to be changed. So, you know, the wealthiest and the most powerful forces in the world are going to have to grapple with this. You know, the Pope said long before this encyclical that an economic system, and this is his words, centered on a God of money, you know, has to really, we have to focus on this. You know, he's saying that the god of money is something that we can't bow down before. And he is saying we have to respect Earth, we have to respect creation. And so, you know, the Koch brothers, the Exxon Mobils of the world aren't going to be doing cartwheels over this encyclical or sending them in the mail to their friends for Christmas. And this pope is radical in the same way, I think, that Jesus and the Gospels are radical. Putting the poor first is a radical thing to do. And I think that's something that, you know, in the United States, I think this encyclical is going to find its toughest audience in the United States, because we have some serious, powerful, invested interests who don't want to see the issues that this pope is raising addressed.
Michael Laughlin, in Rome, the link to the poor, how does the pope make that in the encyclical between climate change and the poor?
Sure. For him, he believes that the poor are really going to bear the brunt of any climate change issues that we'll be facing in the coming decades. And it's kind of a two-step process. He sees the exploitation of the earth as one that is driven by greed and consumption and materialism. And he says that that automatically puts the poor in a desperate position. So he calls on individual believers to really resist that temptation to enter into exploitative relationship with resources. And he says that if we can get away from that, if we can transform our hearts and minds into something that is more concerned about sharing resources, that the poor will benefit from being allowed access to those additional resources, and also the environment will benefit because we won't be so concerned with profit and sales and really driving up this idolization of money. So for the Pope, it's all connected. Taking care of the earth will help us take care of one another, and the poor, of course, will be better off if we're able to do this.
Tom Groom, you've got conservative American Catholics in print today saying this is a Latin American socialist and sort of writing the Pope off in that way. That won't be the first time, but how much can this Pope be brushed aside? Will he be put into some kind of opponents try and put him into that category?
Well, you see, Tom, I mean, his predecessors, Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict, also raised those issues. In fact, Pope Benedict got the nickname of the Green Pope and deserved that nickname.
But that was some solar panels on the roof of the Vatican.
Indeed.
This is a call for global structural change.
Yes, but they didn't have the same clout, the same notoriety on the world stage. Like, there is nobody in the world right now that is will get more attention than the Pope of the Catholic Church. And Pope Francis, just with his own personal charism and so on, has simply won his way into the hearts of the world, and that all people of goodwill, I think, are going to take this very seriously. It would be sad if Catholic Christians did not, since he is our Pope. But nevertheless, he has this powerful voice and this powerful position on the world stage, and he's using it in this crucial issue. And people have asked me, well, why now? Why now? And in some ways, it's only recently that we've had the power to destroy ourselves. I mean, it began with the Industrial Revolution, when we began to pour poisons and gases and dioxides and all the rest of it into our environment. So in a sense, in an old world, for thousands of years, we weren't capable of destroying our environment. We sowed in the springtime and reaped in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have this capacity, and it has become urgent. It has become an emergency. So this is not a left-leaning issue at all, as it has often been characterized in this country. This is a very compelling human issue and one of great urgency. So hopefully he can establish the conversation so that we see beyond those kind of political divides and indeed come to consensus and, as he says, come to real policy changes as well.
I want to come to our listeners, if I may. Tom Groom, John Gehring, Michael O'Loughlin, please stand by. Janice in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Janice, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Tom, and your guest. Yes, I'm Catholic. Thank you so much. I am, of course, for the Pope, but I think that's why he's so appealing. You don't just have to be Catholic. It's just anyone. It's a universal truth. It's like we want to be stewards, good stewards of our earth, our one earth, and respect the earth, respect human life. They all go together. It's just all part of the big picture. I guess I personally live here on the Mississippi River. You know, I'm very concerned about, you know, pesticides going into the chemicals going into the river and killing the fish. And, you know, I don't see my birds anymore, hardly. Butterflies, they've disappeared. You know, bees, where are the bees? You know, so it's like, I'm a litter person. I pick up litter.
Do you see it as a moral issue, as the Pope does, Janice?
Yes, absolutely. It's a moral issue. It's a truthful moral issue. We're all responsible. It's our one earth. I don't care what religion you are. We need to respect the earth as we respect life.
Janice, I appreciate your call. Let me get another one or two in here, if I may. Thank you from La Crosse there, Charleston, South Carolina. Anthony, you're on the air.
Thank you. I heard you play the clip from Rick Santorum. I'm kind of going to echo a little bit of what he said. I have two quick points. The first one is that the Pope is a religious figure, not a scientist. If he was a scientist, he would know that absolutely every single one of the predictions of climate change scientists have failed. There's absolutely no empirical evidence of climate change whatsoever. It was proven to be a massive fraud in the ClimateGate scandal of 2009 when leading climate change scientists were proven to have manipulated data to make it seem like climate change was real.
Anthony, I'm going to have to disagree with you on just about every one of those assertions, but what about the Pope himself if he sees this as a moral issue? Is it his role to step up and speak?
Well, it is a moral issue. Climate change scientists are the ones that are preventing developing countries from using the most efficient, effective resources available to develop their countries. It's a massive wealth redistribution scheme, and he should not be entering into this. He has no idea what he's talking about. Either that or he's playing along with the globalists who are trying to enforce this massive taxation scheme on basically the entire globe at this point.
Anthony, let me take it right there. There is certainly, in this document, Michael O'Loughlin, talk about a global approach. This is a Pope saying we need coordinated global intervention here for change. It will get under the skin of people like Anthony who are allergic to that.
That's right, Tom. It is important to remember that this is not a climate change encyclical. It zooms out a bit. It's about human beings' relationship with the earth, with the environment and natural resources. But the Pope is also not pulling any punches. He is saying in this document that climate change is real, that it's mostly caused by human beings, and that we have to change our behavior in order to prevent any more serious disasters in terms of climate change. And it will, of course, it will get under the skin of climate change skeptics. An American-based group held a protest here in Rome last month, and they plan to continue their efforts to undermine this encyclical. But again, this is not a Pope who's afraid of this. He said that he wants a church that's, he'd rather have a church that's bruised and beat up, but still is willing to engage with the world rather than one that's kind of isolated and safe and pure. So he's not afraid. He knows that there'll be people who disagree. But again, he's just pleading with people to have an open mind as they read this document. And again, consider how they personally interact with their environment.
People who will disagree, including very prominent people, very prominent Catholics, among them Jeb Bush, Catholic, formerly as of this week, a contender for the Republican nomination for the U.S. presidency. He made his big announcement in Miami early in the week. Yesterday, he was in New Hampshire, and he went straight at the Pope on climate change.
I don't get economic policy from my bishops or my cardinals or from my Pope. And I'd like to see what he says as it relates to climate change and how that connects to these broader, deeper issues before I pass judgment. But I think religion ought to be about making us better as people and less about things that end up getting into the political realm.
John Gehring there, Jeb Bush, Catholic, saying, I don't get economic policy from my bishops or my cardinals or my Pope, and the Pope ought to stay, you know, religion ought to stick to making us better as people. Can this be so easily brushed aside, John?
Well, not at all. I mean, I think you see Catholic Republicans shaking in their boots because for a long time, the Catholic political narrative in this country has been narrowly framed. And look, I think you see a rising number of bishops in this country who have been empowered by Pope Francis to have a more expansive pro-life conversation. Pope Francis sees rising economic inequality, climate change as pro-life issues. And, you know, Jeb Bush and others can wish that away, but they're going to have to deal with it.
Pro-life issue, do you see that, Tom Groom?
I think in the larger context, it's all for life. And I mean, if we destroy ourselves, if we are poisoning ourselves, then surely that's against life. So the people who disagree with the science the Pope talks about a consistent scientific consensus. And I think we have that at this time. So to go on denying it, I think it's just simply to bury our heads in the sand. And it has no warrant whatsoever. So in a sense, he's calling us to face reality.
Fred in Belmont, Massachusetts. Fred, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. Good day, gentlemen. This is a beautiful, beautiful conversation. I think Republicans are right to be a bit nervous about Pope Francis, who I grew up Lutheran, and I'm agnostic as a form of background and Democrat-leaning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the stock market system is immoral, amoral in a way, and it's a form of indulgence or absolution for only protecting the bottom line is a way of absolving people of moral responsibility. And one of the candidates, Republican, said that, what is he, a closet Marxist or something? I think we're conditioned with the Cold War and just the 20th century not to say anything against capitalism. I'm a capitalist, but also a Protestant, or it was. So I think we can talk against or criticize our own country, just as Catholics should be able to criticize the Pope.
Fred, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. John Gehring, this Pope is indeed taking on capitalism as practiced, as part of his critique. So, does a good Catholic have to take on the whole here? That may be a lot for some American Catholics to swallow.
It will be. I mean, as I said earlier, I think, you know, the United States is going to really have to grapple with this document. I mean, this Pope has said an economy of exclusion and inequality kills. He is elevating a conversation about how do we have a moral economy? How do we have moral budgets? And, you know, again, this is traditional Catholic teaching in mm-hmm. a more expansive sense. He's not going rogue here at all. But mm-hmm. certainly many powerful people in this country who do benefit from this status quo are going to be made to feel very uncomfortable by this. And just to build quickly off your caller's point, I think he's absolutely right. I mean, the Pope has said in terms of priorities, you know, we get all, unnerved if the stock market moves up or down 1 point. But if an elderly person dies in the street, we don't care. And so I think he's raising profoundly human issues in a moral way that, you know, has the real potential to change our values debate in politics.
Michael O'Loughlin in Rome, I just got you for another minute or two. You've written about how the church has prepared a major rollout for this encyclical and its implications, that people have been prepped all over the country, I suppose around the world, to preach sermons on this front, to engage in lay Catholics in all kinds of ways. Like what, Michael?
Sure. The rollout itself is emblematic of what this Pope hopes the encyclical accomplishes. Tomorrow, here in Rome, we'll have a Catholic cardinal, an Orthodox theologian, an atheist scientist, and then an American woman, Dr. Carolyn Wu, who leads one of the world's largest Catholic anti-poverty efforts. And the point of including this diverse panel was that, again, this is meant for all people. And in terms of getting the message out after tomorrow, the Pope has, or rather bishops in individual countries and lay Catholic groups have planned campaigns to provide resources for priests to preach on climate change and preach on the encyclical. Some parishes are launching training days in order to train green teams for people to engage in things like community gardens and local activism on the local level. Again, there's some political efforts to put pressure on leaders to adopt more climate-friendly legislation. And, you know, in the Archdiocese of Chicago, for example, where I live, the Archdiocese is going through a massive effort to bring its rather large real estate footprint up to modern standards in terms of plumbing and heating and electricity. And, again, this is another tool in the Catholic world in order to reconsider how we approach the environment. As Professor Groom said, this isn't compelling Catholics to act a certain way, but trying to get them to consider how they might personally change their hearts and minds and maybe nudge on their friends and families to do the same.
Michael O'Loughlin with the Catholic news site Crux joining us today from Rome. It's been great to have you here, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be with you.
Tom Groom, is the pressure going to be on Catholics to change their ways?
I think it has to be, Tom. I mean, this is if we take our spirituality seriously, then this has to bring us to, alarm us, has to alert us, and has to bring us to decision and to implement both personally, beginning with simple things like to reuse, to recycle, mm-hmm. to reduce. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of us can practice the 3 R's. But Michael's point there about the church itself in its buildings and so on has to look at are they environmentally friendly and so on. So I think there's a huge agenda ahead.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Pope Francis launching a kind of Catholic crusade on climate change this week, a big new encyclical linking climate, justice, the way we are living, all of creation, the Pope saying, stop change. It is very, very powerful piece of work. Draft leaked this week, full thing out tomorrow. The Catholic Church preparing a big rollout to get the faithful engaged, but this message is traveling well beyond the church. Here's the Pope. He's been talking about this for a while. He was on his way to the Philippines here after Typhoon Haiyan, talking about the role of humans in climate change.
I don't know if climate change is all man's fault, but the majority is. For the most part, it is man who continuously slaps down nature. We have, in a sense, lorded it over nature, over Sister Earth, over Mother Earth.
Over Sister Earth, over Mother Earth. Thomas Groom is with us, professor of theology at Boston College. John Gehring is here, Catholic program director at Faith in Public Life, joins us from Washington. With us as well right now from Wayland, Massachusetts, Wen Stevenson, climate activist, contributing writer for The Nation, former On Point senior producer. He's got a book coming out this fall called What We're Fighting For Now Is Each Other, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Climate Justice. Wen Stevenson, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here and kind of funny to be on this end of the radio from you.
It's great to have you right there. You've gone out into the world of activism. You're reporting very deeply on it in this book. Will this encyclical from this Pope rally the troops, Wen? Is this a big deal in the world that you're writing in such depth about in What We're Fighting For Now Is Each Other?
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge deal. It's hard to overstate that. in many ways, Francis here is echoing what the climate movement, the climate justice movement, has been saying for a long time, that climate is fundamentally a justice issue, both for the world's poor and oppressed, and for, this is important, very important for today's young people and future generations. And it makes sense. It makes sense that Francis would be, you know, the climate justice pope. He's from Latin America. He's the first pope from the global south, which is where the center of gravity of the church now is. In the global south, in the developing world, and certainly in poor parts of this country as well, you know, climate justice, that idea, is not some radical fringe idea. It's the majority view. It's common sense. It's lived experience, you know. And it's really only in the U.S. and in our kind of mainstream conversation that climate justice, sounds lefty or something, you know.
Wen Stevenson, in your book, you write that this is essentially a spiritual struggle going on around climate and climate change. You write it forces us to confront the deepest, most difficult questions about ourselves. The Pope Francis, striking a similar note in this encyclical. What do you mean when you say it's a spiritual struggle, Wen?
Right. Well, if you think about it, I mean, this is really an unprecedented kind of radical situation. I mean, it's so fundamental that it really strikes to the root of who we are. It forces us to really think about who we are and to examine our conscience and to ask ourselves, you know, what are we going to do? Like so many, maybe all great moral struggles in history, it's fundamentally a kind of spiritual struggle. And that doesn't necessarily mean religious in the conventional sense, although for many, many people it is. But it is, you know, it's a kind of moral necessity that is being that is being brought to bear here. So.
Wen Stevenson's new book is coming out in October. What We're Fighting For Now Is Each Other. Let me bring in Matt from Lacona, Iowa. Matt, you're on the air. Thank you for calling, Matt.
Hey, Tom. I farm in Iowa, and we're certainly, farmers are dealing with extreme weather in really extreme ways. American farmers have also been some of the loudest voices denying climate change. So I think this is really important, what the Pope's going to talk about. And it really, for me, as I'm on my tractor and in my fields, it's really the Garden of Eden. We're on the cusp of being able to play out Genesis and destroy our Eden. This is really about original sin. But we also have the New Testament. So the temptation, the apple of fossil fuels, we want to cling to, but that's sinful. And when we let go of that and we think about Christ the Redeemer, we can get beyond that and move into right relationship with creation and with other people. And so I think the Pope is going to have a profound impact on American farmers.
Farmer Matt, you're clearly thinking deeply about this. I don't know if everybody agrees, but we can hear the connections you're making. Let me hold that and get one more call, if I may. Thank you, Matt. Dave in Nashville. Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Hello to your guests as well.
Yes.
I think, as a Catholic, I think I can explain some of the ambivalence or even hostility, if you will, to the Pope's message now on the climate issue of AGW is that for the first time at my age, 38, this is the first time when I've heard the, I guess I would call it, the, for lack of a better term, the mainstream media in such agreement with the pontiff. I've heard you, with no disrespect intended, I've heard you several times on this show ask if this will be a call to arms for the faithful to change the way that we live.
Yes.
In my own life, I have done, I agree that we should be good stewards of the earth. I do everything possible in my own small way, from recycling to what have you, to make sure that I am trying to leave as small of a negative imprint as I can upon the earth. But as I say, this is the first time that I've heard the teachings of the pontiff spoke about in a positive manner. When he speaks on sexual morality, when the church comes out with its teachings on any given number of subjects that don't agree with the outside world's way of thinking, then those are easily pushed aside. Those are, we are told, things that we can not agree with the church will.
Yeah, Dave, I get it. I get it. And if I may, though, and I acknowledge in exactly those terms a kind of inconsistency in the way the world or media sometimes responds to the Pope. So I take your point. I acknowledge it. On this front, are you prepared to go with the Pope's teaching in the encyclical as a Catholic?
Well, I will say this. I think that AGW is a matter of, for many people.
What's AGW, Dave? I'm not following that. AGW, what's that?
Anthropomorphic global warming. That
okay.
is man-caused yep. global warming. I certainly believe in global warming, climate change, if you will, because yep. I think that happens all the time. Whether that is man-made or not, I think that is still an open question, but I think it will be a question that will answer itself in a time frame. Meanwhile, we have instantaneous things. I mean, if we read the news away from some of the more primary sources, we see that tens, hundreds, thousands of Christians and non-Muslims around the world are being killed immediately. And we're still talking about the possible worst-case scenarios in 50 to 100 years of global warming. I think there are a much more immediate tasks which we should be, which we serve, while at the same time we do live our lives in a way that we are good stewards of this planet.
Dave acknowledged, I think Pope Francis is saying this is also a contemporary, urgent, now issue. But if I may, Tom Groom, here our caller Dave is accusing the media of being sort of a cafeteria nibblers at the papal teachings. What about Catholics and the sort of cafeteria Catholic approach here? Can Catholics pick and choose which of the Pope's teaching they embrace?
Well, you see, more conservative Catholics, Tom, over the years have accused everybody else of being cafeteria Catholics. In other words, when we had two more conservative popes, theologically more conservative, Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict, more conservative traditional Catholics were very comfortable with them and often accused the rest of us of being cafeteria Catholics, in other words, picking and choosing. I think you're going to see a fair round of cafeteria Catholicism on this issue, and I think it'll be our more conservative and traditional brothers and sisters who will be balking at this type of message. But in a sense, he's calling us to a conversion. He's calling us to a spiritual conversion. That we it's interesting that Laudate Si is the title, you know, the opening line of St. Francis. Praise be. But the opening line of St. Francis is Canticle of the Sun. And basically what this Francis is doing is calling us to stand in awe. First of all, to stand in awe of creation, to find our God in the midst of creation, which is a rich part of Christian and world spirituality. It's appealing to our souls, to our spirits, and saying, where is your God? And how do you take that relationship with God and put it to work in the ordinary and everyday? And if we're finding God in the midst of God's creation, as the Bible constantly urges us to do, then we have to be responsible by way of our faith, by way of our spirituality, in caring for the presence of God within this good creation and our responsibility to be good stewards of it.
John Gehring, in your book titled The Francis Effect, you call this a radical pope. Is this a radical document coming out, a revolutionary document?
I do think it's radical, and it's radical not in a political or ideological sense. It's radical in the sense that it's getting to the root of the gospel again. You know, this pope wants to evaluate the moral measure of our society not by our GDP or how high or low our stock market falls, but how we treat the poor and most vulnerable. And I just wanted to lift up quickly one point we haven't addressed, which is, you know, while the church speaks with great moral and spiritual authority on these issues, it also has great practical wisdom. Organizations like Catholic Relief Services are in 100 countries around the world and really on the front lines working with climate refugees and fighting for sustainable development. So along with a centuries-old tradition of reflecting on human dignity and the common good, the church really brings a bottom-up perspective. I mean, Michael O'Loughlin mentioned earlier in the call that Carolyn Wu, the head of Catholic Relief Services, has been invited to the Vatican for the press release for the announcement of this encyclical. So, you know, the church really does have experience dealing with this on the front lines that I think is quite important.
Emma in Boston. Thank you for calling, Emma. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So I myself am an atheist. I was raised Jewish, but I really kind of deny religion as an institution. But I can't help but see the importance of this the Pope's announcement, because it's people listen to him and all of these things he's been saying lately against capitalism and you know, talking about climate change. I think it's really changing the dialogue, and I think it's really telling and important where we are right now in terms of making these things more mainstream and having people kind of second guess what they've been told by people like Brick Syndrome, who we heard earlier, kind of deny the Pope.
So not Catholic, not even a believer, but welcoming this message from this pope. Emma, we've got it, and I appreciate it. One more, if I may. Kesser in Germantown, Wisconsin. Kesser, you're on.
Yes, sir. It's incredible. This pope, everything he says resonates so much. And I'm a Muslim. To what I have studied in Quran regarding environment, whether it's in Bible or Torah, when he speaks, I feel that it's a spiritual leader that I feel a connection with. I think we should embrace this leader, and we should be very worried about the political leaders who wear the religion under their sleeves. We should be very afraid of people like Santorum and other, you know, this guy is talking about, you know, the goodness of the world. And the second point, Tom, is when you introduce the topic of the show, you use the word crusade. A crusade to me is when millions, and it's off the topic a little bit, when millions of Muslims were killed by the Christians. I don't think you will ever use the word, you know, Holocaust against environment. I don't think you will use that, because it will offend Jews. We should use the words that do not offend people of other religions. To me, when you use the word crusade, I feel that, you know, a lot of my fellow Muslims were killed by the crusaders just because they wanted to expand Christianity.
Kesser, if I may just respond. First, I really appreciate your call, and I'm touched to hear your response to all of the teaching here, and you're seeing parallels between what the Pope is saying and your study of the Quran. On my use of the crusade, I apologize for the offense that it gives, and I may not be fully tuned into it. It may be a word like jihad, which can have a different sound to different audiences. Of course, in the centuries since the Crusades, it's taken on some of a different meaning in culture as well, for often very well-intentioned, very moral efforts. But I take your point. I take it seriously, and I appreciate your call on both fronts. John Gehring, I wonder how you think this will all resolve politically, practically. Here's a pope putting down challenges. He's going to stand before the U.S. Congress this fall. I think the first pope ever to stand before a joint session of Congress.
Yes, that's right.
With this now on the table and much more, these are challenges on the energy front, on the way we live front, on the structure of our economy front. How does this resolve?
Well, I mean, that's the big question. You know, I think this pope, as we've talked about throughout the show, is a unique messenger who can reach far beyond kind of the progressive choir that's already converted on this issue. And I do think that he has the ability, as we've heard from some of our callers, to reach hearts and minds in a way that most politicians can't. I mean, in terms of his address to Congress, I mean, that's going to be an incredible moment to watch because, you know, the pope is a transcendent figure. He can hopefully elevate this discussion. He can elevate the discussion of moral markets, of how we treat our immigrants in this country to a different plateau, to a different level than most politicians can. And yeah, I do think you'll see plenty of Republicans, including Speaker John Boehner, who invited the pope to speak, you know, squirming a little bit in their seats because he's raising issues that, you know, conservative Republicans and Catholics have not wanted to talk about for many years.
Wayne, our time is very short. Climate activists, yourself now among them. Do you see fuel for the movement here?
Absolutely. And I think it's as important, the challenge the pope is offering here to the Democrats and the left as it is to the deniers in Congress. Everyone's got to get serious about this. You know, the only guy running for the Democratic nomination who takes climate change seriously is Bernie Sanders, and he's not even a Democrat.
Wayne Stevenson, author of the forthcoming What We're Fighting For Now Is Each Other. Wayne, thanks for being with us. Tom Groom, the heart of the theology here, respect for God, respect for creation.
Yes, indeed, and that this is an urgent spiritual issue, and all of us are called to it, regardless of what our particular faith tradition might be.
Thomas Groom with Boston College, John Gehring at Faith in Public Life. To all our guests this hour, our thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.